Now, it's 18 minutes past eight, and as you may have heard in the bulletin, the head of the Garda Drugs and Organised Crime Unit says that files have been sent to the DPP, and he's confident that senior members of the Kinahan Organised Crime Group will be brought to justice. In a wide-ranging interview, Assistant Commissioner Justin Kelly has been speaking to our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds about allegations of corruption within An Garda Síochána, the response to domestic violence and organised crime.
We've had a significant amount of convictions. We've convicted 68 people from the Kinahan organised crime group alone. So we continue to do that. Threats to life operations are a high priority for us, particularly our units in the Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau. And what's interesting about those is we see a marked decrease in those. This year we've only had three of these threat to life operations. And these operations are in essence targeting murder gangs who are highly organised and who are often well financed, and their sole goal is to murder rival members of other gangs. So we've seen a decrease in them. I suppose at the height of the Hutch-Kinahan feud, the numbers of those were around 27. So we have convicted a large amount of people who are involved in these, and as you can see, the impact that that has had, because we've really affected their ability to mount those type of operations.
But you have an issue then towards the end of the year, for example, where we see gangland shootings and gangland murders increasing. I mean, it was two last year, it's gone up to six. Now, six isn't a huge amount when you compare it to years ago when it was up to 20 and 28, 25 a year. But six people murdered so far this year in gangland crimes. That's a jeopardy point, isn't it? That's a worry. There are feuds in Finglas, there are feuds in West Dublin.
Absolutely, Paul, and I suppose we saw the homicide rates connected to, if you want to call it, gangland crime during COVID, obviously at historically low rates. The recent upsurge that you've referenced there obviously is a cause of concern to us. Any of these murders, obviously for those communities involved, for the families of the deceased, hugely distressing. But I suppose what we've seen is our analysis is a move away from those highly organised gangland murders to now more unstructured, localised groups who are operating in those areas that you've spoken about. So my role here in organising serious crime is to provide support and assistance to, I suppose, local units, particularly within Dublin, and that's what we continue to do. I suppose a challenge for us is the volatility and uncertainty around some of these groups, the unstructured nature of it.
There's some indication that the Kinahans are now being replaced by a family-based gang out in the west of Dublin, and that they are now controlling much of the drugs in this country.
Well, any time that you, I suppose, have a major impact on a particular group, particularly a large multinational or transnational group, say, for example, like the Kinahan Organised Crime Group, there will be a vacuum and there will be groups that will move into that because there's obviously huge financial gain for them. But for us, we absolutely are not taking our eye off the ball when any of those emerging groups and we're running successful operations on a daily basis out of drugs and organised crime targeting those groups. So absolutely, there is a vacuum, there are other groups. But I mean, that's the nature of organised crime, the financial gain that's available to them.
In relation to the Kinahans, people might say, there was a huge international operation which launched out of Dublin in April of this year, and the three top Kinahan leaders are now wanted. Why aren't any of them behind bars?
I think I can say with some confidence that none of the senior members of the Kinahan Organised Crime Group will come voluntarily back to Ireland. I think we can say that. And what I will say also is we have submitted a number of investigation files to the Directorate of Public Prosecutions, and we have some other ones underway in relation to senior members of the Kinahan Organised Crime Group. So I'm confident that senior members of that group will be brought to justice. Where that happens, I think at this stage, it's too early to say.
It may not happen in this country, though.
Absolutely, yeah. And as you rightly said, we are working hand in hand with international partners. So where that goes, I suppose we will see. We've recently had members of Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau with other international colleagues in the UAE. We've met colleagues over there from Dubai. So like I say, for us, those international relations are absolutely essential when you're targeting a transnational group like the Kinahan Organised Crime Group.
You talk about organised crime, but it isn't limited to gangland. It isn't limited to drugs and firearms. I mean, this year there's been a huge increase in the activities of international organised crime gangs in relation to fraud in this country. What are you doing about that?
Well, I suppose, as you rightly say, we've seen an increase in that, and I suppose the absolute apex of that was during COVID, when I suppose all our lives had moved online. Now, we are seeing a return to the pre-COVID levels of fraud activity. But within my own region here, we've mounted a large number of highly successful operations. And I can give you an example of Operation Skene, which targeted a West African group known as Black Axe. So we have identified here in Ireland 800 people connected in various ways to that group. And we have seen up to €45 million laundered through accounts here in Ireland by that group. So we've had significant days of action and arrests. We've made over 235 arrests for members of that group.
There has been a concern, though, this year in particular, about the effectiveness of the guards' ability to tackle organised crime, because there have been allegations that the guards themselves have been infiltrated by organised crime groups, and that some members of the Gardaí are actually working for organised crime groups. What do you say to that?
Well, what I'd say to you is, look, the work of a Garda Síochána, we absolutely need the trust of the public. We're a community-based police force, so anything that can affect that trust can affect, you know, our legitimacy to police. So for us, we absolutely take this seriously. It's a policing priority for us to deal with any allegations of mispractice, corruption, criminality. And you'll have seen this year alone, we've mounted a number of very successful investigations that led to prosecutions, both the former and serving members of an Garda Síochána. So I think...
Is it widespread?
Well, what I would say is, from my knowledge and my position, the intelligence that I know, I would not say it's widespread. Although we have had issues with criminality within the organisation, I think they're very small numbers, so I think the public should be reassured by that.
There was also a very high-profile case in relation to coercive control this year, where a member of the Garda, Paul Moody, was jailed for 3 years for torturing and terrorising a woman suffering from cancer. It was a shocking case, but it once again brought to the fore the horrors of coercive control. What are you doing about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, extremely distressing case for the victim. And as you can see in that case, an absolute meticulous investigation by members of the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation that led to that conviction. And, you know, I'm very happy to say that we've an increase in coercive control investigations and convictions. And I suppose this is relatively new legislation, you know, and it's a complex area. But we really encourage people who are victims of coercive control to come forward to us. We know from our analysis of statistics that this time of year can be a really challenging time for victims of domestic abuse. And what I would say to people out there who are victims is to come forward to us. That's what we really need people to do. And we want them to come forward so we can reassure, support them, and obviously bring perpetrators to justice. We have done a considerable amount of work in the last few years really to professionalise our own approach to it. We now have approximately 400 officers in Divisional Protective Services units, experts in this area. We've trained a large amount of the force in understanding domestic violence and dealing with it. So we've put a lot of work in place. So I'd really ask victims to come forward if they're in those really difficult and challenging situations, and we will support them.
And you were listening there to Assistant Commissioner Justin Kelly. He was talking to our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds.